Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Met. Limark Technical Met has been going on for more than 43 years. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, we sit in front of our radios and listen to each other and speak to each other, teach each other, learn from each other, and are entertained by each other, I hope. As I always say about this hobby, if you're not having fun, you're doing it all wrong. So I thank you all for joining me again this Sunday night at 8 o'clock, our pre-Thanksgiving holidays episode of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a second, and I will turn with the usual link. Okay. If you are interested in contacting me via email, if you can't reach me on the radio, that would be either for mailbag questions. Those are questions that usually are asked during the technical net, but you might not be available on Sunday night at 8 p.m. So you can email me the questions, and if they're interesting, we'll discuss them, and you can listen either through our internet stream or the archives of the technical net. It could be for a subject in the news that you're familiar with, that you'd like to share more information with us. Sometimes it's a presentation. Sometimes people want to be part of a conversation on a topic. Sometimes people just want to sit back and listen to other people discuss the topic. So you can volunteer topics. Also, we're always looking for technical puzzles. It's been a while since I found a really nice one, and I'm always looking out for them, but they're very, very rare and relatively priceless. So that would be another reason. Or if you want me to poke Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space or a NASA-related story, of course, you can email him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. You could reach me via email using either the old link, mailbag@ac2gs.com, or the new one, roy@limarktech.net. We have a link page full of interesting articles. If I found them interesting over the past week and I share them with everyone, they'll be up 24/7. You don't have to look at it tonight. It'll be there tomorrow. It'll be there next month. It's you just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, or alternatively links.limarktech.net, and it will show you my link page. We also have a chat room available. It's been kind of quiet the last few months, but you never know. Some conversations might break out. You get there by typing into your browser either chat.ac2gs.com, or you can use chat.limarktech.net. We have an audio stream available. I set it up for the technical net, but some people wanted it on for the rest of the week, so it's available to listen to Glen Oaks if you're outside of radio range. You get the internet stream by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com or stream.limarktech.net. And, of course, I like to remind people of MyKC2NJI's great archive site, amateurradio.tv. Has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So those are the usual links. Let me drop, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Well, we're going to have the usual courses. We will ask for questions and comments and topics of a technical nature. I, of course, would appreciate it if the first few entries are amateur radio related, since this is an amateur radio technical net. But we will occupy any topic in the realms of science, technology, what have you. I'm game if you are. So we'll ask people to line up and hit that push to talk. Give us your first name and your call sign. It's always good to say if you have a topic or a question, and especially if it's amateur radio related. Also, I would just like to change the at 10:15 that we'll begin the SpaceNet report with full WS2S. That will take us to 11 o'clock, and I will return at that point to tie a bow on it and wish you well for the week. So that's my plan. If the laws of physics maintain themselves, and my my shack works the way it's supposed to, and the repeater works the way it's supposed to, and the All-Star Link, of course, works the way it's supposed to. It had a little bit of a hiccup last week. So that's the plan. But before we get to the questions and the comments and such, I just want to offer you a television show that I recently saw that's been around for a couple of years, but I completely missed it. So I'll drop for a second, and I'll tell you my little synopsis. Okay, it's from, it's an Apple Plus series. It's called For All Mankind. I'm very curious if Paul WS2N is familiar with it. It has a very interesting thing going on with it, a little hook. It's an alternative history. I don't know if people like it or don't like it, but there's been alternate histories where, you know, Germany won World War II and all kinds of other things. This particular alternative history is right before Apollo 11 launched, a month before the Russians snuck up on the moon and landed a man there first. So the first man to reach the moon was a Russian, not an American. And, of course, it goes on to tell the story of a slightly altered Apollo 11 mission that was successful. And the idea is, rather than in our history where landing on the moon pretty much deflated the entire Russian space program, that there was a perpetual space race among the Russians and the Americans for decades after. So every season they jump 10 years into the future, and it's basically competition between the Russian space program and the American space program. And it's written, directed, and produced by a bunch of guys that I really love. Ron Moore was a writer for Star Trek, so you can't go wrong with that. Naren Shankar was also a writer for Star Trek. He also did CSI. They're very, very successful writers and showrunners. So if you have a friend who has Apple TV, Apple Plus, check out at least the first episode. So I'm very curious, Paul. Have you ever heard of this show, For All Mankind?
WS2N. Yes, I heard of it. In fact, Frank, WB2, escapes his call escapes me, you know, from Philadelphia. He told me about it. And it confused me a bit because I have the book For All Mankind. And he was explaining the movie, and it was nothing. Nothing to do with the series that he was explaining. What he told me, it sounded very, very good. But I don't have Apple, so I have not watched it yet. So, that really threw me. It's a very good book, For All Mankind. Nothing to do with what you guys are talking about, though. But I would if it ever gets on Netflix, I'll watch it and. Where you go on with the rest of it, I have a recommendation if you do have Netflix for a good movie. Back to you.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to hear it. It's a television series. It's gone through three seasons. I think it just started its fourth season. It's done two episodes in the fourth season. And, you have to understand that the title kind of lends itself to anything related to Apollo 11 because that's part of the sentence that was first uttered when he stepped on the surface of the moon. So they kind of reuse it for all kinds of different things. I assume the book that you're talking about is a nonfiction book, and this is definitively a work of fiction, you know, an alternative reality. I think that the premise, according to the writers, was, you'll know probably better than me, there was a really excellent guy in charge of the Russian space program, and there was an accident, and he died in 1966. So the way that they conceived of the plot was, in this alternative reality, he didn't die in the accident, and he survived to sneak his cosmonauts up into the moon.
Yeah, sounds good. Korolev, I mean, begin with K. Anyway, yeah, in real life he did die. And the public didn't know about it. We did not know about it. We did not know he was like the father of the Russian space program. He was like to our Wernher von Braun, you know. But we didn't know until after he was long dead that he was gone, and that, you know, what he was really meant to the program for the Russians. The book, I'm looking for it on my shelf. Anyway, the book comes from the late 90s. And nothing to do with the movie. I hate when they steal other names from other books or other titles like that. I don't know how they get away with that. But they do.
Well, I mean, the problem is that there's only so many short phrases you can put on a book, and book publishing, although it's not as lucrative as it once was, they publish tens of thousands of books every year. So there's a lot of duplicate names for books. If you ever have nothing better to do, just come up with a three or a four word title and throw it into Amazon. You're almost guaranteed to find four different books about four different things with that title. So it's something that I think everyone has kind of grown used to. They even let you get away with it for movies many times. So, you know, because you just run out of names and titles for things after a short while.
True. Okay, do you want the name of this very good movie? It was actually a four-part series on Netflix.
Yeah, sure, please.
I don't know if you have Netflix, but that's what one that I do have. I don't have the Apple. This is called All the Light You Cannot See. It's the name of the four-part series taken from a book. I looked it up. The book was like over 500 pages. But I got this movie from listening to ARN, Amateur Radio Newsline. And last week they were talking about it, and they said it involves radios. You know how they go on Newsline. It involves radios, and it's a good movie, and it's on Netflix. I thought, okay, I'll give it a try. So I looked it up. Sure enough, four parts. Very well done. Takes you back to the end of World War II. Occupied France. You know, the resistance there, and two radios by two people play a very important part in the whole movie from the beginning until the end. So, very well done. Back to you, Ryan.
AC2GS. Well, I got to check that out, Paul. Thank you very much. One way or the other, I can finagle finding these, no matter what streaming service they're hiding on. There are too many streaming services. You know, we're in the midst. I think hopefully we're in the tail end of the streaming wars. A lot of these streaming services are just not going to be viable. They're going to merge with others. Hulu is merging with Disney Plus, I think, and a lot of other things are going to end up merging. And it may not be like it was originally with Netflix, in that it's only Netflix and nothing but Netflix, but I think all these multitude of streaming services will condense down to maybe two or three in the end. And I'm certainly looking forward to it because no one can afford to invest in all the streaming services. It's just there's too many, and the total amount of cost is kind of absurd. But thank you very much, Paul.
Okay, very good. I'll let you continue on. And again, if anybody's listening, that movie is All the Light You Cannot See. Very well done. Back to you.
Very good. Someone wanted to say something?
All the Light You Cannot See. That was the name on the Netflix?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, very good. This, again, is AC2GS and the Weimark Technical Net, so we're open for business. If anyone out there has a topic for discussion, feel free. Hit that push-to-talk button. Give me first name, full size, and if it's amateur related or not amateur related, and a question or a comment or what have you. So let her rip.
Alpha Delta 2 Delta Uniform.
Alex, recognize there was a station before Alex. Your audio was very, very low. Some like 16 decibels below everyone else. So if you could crank up the audio, I would appreciate it, and try it again.
AC2, SHO.
Oh, very good, John. Glad to see you. I saw you on my little IRLP summary page, so I'm glad that you were able to boost that audio. Okay, we have John and Alex. Anyone else want to put their name down?
PZ.
Rich recognized. Okay, we have John, we have Alex, and we have Rich. Anyone else?
Bravo.
W2CHB.
BR2K.
Okay, one second. I think I'm doubling with you, and I can sort of hear you, but as I'm talking, it's kind of difficult to recall the call sign. So the last two gentlemen, the first one go first, and the second one goes second again, very slowly.
W2 Bravo.
Okay, I have Whiskey 2, Charlie, Alpha, Bravo. What's your first name, sir?
Sorry. New Go Hotel Bravo WCHB Stefan.
Okay, Stefan, I have you. Is there another person who wanted to check in?
Whiskey Romeo 2 Kilo Kevin.
Okay, got Kevin. We have enough to begin with. Anyone else want to put their name down though? Okay, very good. So we will start with you, John. What's your question or your comment for tonight? Okay, unfortunately I doubled with you. Would you like to give me your call sign again? I say again, the last gentleman who threw his call sign out, I was talking while you were talking, so I couldn't read what you were saying. Would you like to give me your call sign one more time? Okay, perhaps later. So let's get back to the top of this growing list. It's always nice to see your growing list. Yes, sir. It's very strange. We seem to keep doubling with each other, and I keep on being in the middle of saying something, and I hear your call sign sort of. It's a little noisy. Do you have a question tonight, or are you just checking into the net? Okay, not quite sure what's going on here. Let's get to you, John, and hopefully the gentleman who was breaking in while I was talking will have a question later on tonight. So, John, what's your question or your comment for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. I hope the audio isn't too bad now. I did notice that maybe the node volume got bumped. So, first off, is my audio okay?
It's perfectly readable. There's a bit of a hum in the background, but I can live with it.
Yeah, apologies for my very old and dated and open chassis notes. But I have a two-parter. I'm happy to save the second part for later. But my first part is just I was telling a friend mostly about the SpaceNet report because he seemed very interested in that. But when I went to the Limewire website, I could not find an all-star node number. I hope I didn't miss something. I could only find the IRLP listed there, so I was hoping you could tell me what the all-star node number is so he can listen.
Okay, I believe it is 576-290.
Okay. 576-290. Part two, you recall me sending you an article of the development that happened here at Los Alamos Labs where they produced some antennas they called light slingers, and was wondering if that was an interesting topic, interesting enough for explanation, or if you even understand it, or, well, if you even got it. So AC2GSKC2SHO.
Well, it sounds fascinating. No, I did not get it. When did you send it?
Well, it was many months ago, so my apologies for bringing up something so far back, but I don't get on the net as often as I'd like, as you know. 6 p.m. here is your 8 p.m., and it's usually when we're making dinner, and sometimes I just don't get to it, or we're not home, or whatever. But anyway, yeah, so they developed these antennas called light slingers, and it's some kind of thumb antenna, if you will. I'm not going to be real good at regurgitating what that article said, but we could look at it again and try again next week, and maybe we'd both be better off if we did that.
Yeah, sure. I would love to discuss it. Like I said, it sounds interesting at the very least. Is it a standing wave antenna or a traveling wave antenna?
Sorry, my node was IDing. Let me make sure I'm not doubling. The answer, Roy, is neither. These work at a different level. I have to admit that I went to a presentation on them and found it completely fascinating and had some questions, but I'm on a little different level than the scientists, perhaps, since I play with the gear down at a lower level, you know, network analyzers and things like that. And so I tried to get an understanding, but I didn't fully understand. But if you type in Los Alamos and light slingers, you will definitely find this novel approach to antennas that they, and maybe a better explanation than I'm going to give. Well, surely a better explanation than I'm going to give. And again, if you want to, we'll try it again next week maybe, but maybe some other people would like to look it up in the meantime as well. So maybe the best course of action.
Okay, very good, John. I've written it down in my little notes that I keep for each and every one of my TechNets, and I will read up on it this week, and I hope you'll be able to join us. Next week is going to be the extended Thanksgiving weekend, so I hope you'll, despite it, you'll be able to join us, and you know, if not, then we can talk about it the week after, whatever works best for you, but sounds fascinating. I look forward to it. John, I'm sorry, but we didn't get hardly anything. I got the kind of hum background, low signal, and I could just barely make out the sound of some human voice. It was very close to the very low noise level, so your audio was practically non-existent. I don't know. You may have to reboot that IRLP. It's not doing well. The last two transmissions again were about 99% low level noise and 1% your voice. Nope. No joy here. Again, I don't know what happened, but there's practically no audio coming through IRLP. Well, like I said last time, hopefully you're able to hear me better than I'm able to hear you. I'll pencil you in for next week. I'll read up on it this week. If you're able to join us next Sunday, that'll be great. I'd love to have a conversation about it. If you're not able to do it next Sunday, you know, we could do it for a future Sunday. No problems. Okay, I guess that's it for the IRLP link. Yeah, you know, sometimes these lovely things work beautifully, and sometimes they don't. So I thank you, John, and I hope your friend tunes in to the All-Star link and, you know, participates. That would even be better. Let's move on to the next person for now. Alex, AD2DU, what's your question for today?
So I was thinking about having some HF gear in the car in attack. Sitting there, going into winter, in terms of what types of batteries are going to, like, is a LiFePO battery going to be okay freezing in the car? Conversely, is a 650 rechargeable cell fare any better?
Well, the cell is lithium ion. I am a big fan of lithium iron phosphate. Matter of fact, my understanding is that the Tesla vehicles are going to be shifted from lithium ion to lithium iron phosphate. They are a bit safer. The Tesla has these large battery banks that they sell countries as kind of backup power for when the generator fails, and they've swapped out lithium ion for lithium ion phosphates, and although they still have the occasional fire, they seem to be far less dangerous. So I'm a big fan of lithium ion phosphate. I would assume best practices would be to take the lithium iron phosphate with you when you leave the car at the end of the day, and you know, take it into the when you're ready to drive, you connect it, and you crank up the engine and keep it nice and warm. You know, if you park it in the middle of the day and it's cold, you probably are not going to get quite as good efficiency out of it. But I can't think of anything better solution other than to waste energy warming it or taking it with you wherever you go. But I don't think there would be any benefit to using the lithium ions over the lithium iron phosphate under those circumstances.
Can you leave just AA cells? Like, can you leave any battery in the car? I didn't know if it was something like the liquid. I don't even know if it was liquid exam. It ended up with broken battery in the car.
I haven't heard of any reports, especially the temperatures that New York tends to have. Maybe in Antarctica or Alaska or something. I haven't really heard of too many explosions based upon low temperature. What usually happens is you prematurely age the battery, and also you limit the amount of energy extraction until it warms up. That's the primary problem with batteries. They're all chemical reactions. They're oxidation reduction reactions where the electron transfer, rather than taking place in the solution, takes place through your circuits and such. So I don't think there's a big problem. I mean, theoretically, you could take an alkaline a battery and stick it in the glove box, and I doubt that it'll ever explode on you, even if you leave it out in the car all day and all night. It won't be the greatest battery that you own, but I don't think it's a dangerous thing. Most batteries are either solid or they have a very small amount of fluid in them. And so although most fluids tend to expand when they freeze, the amount of volume change is probably inconsequential.
I guess people leave a backup flashlight in the car. All right, so I'll leave a backup flashlight in an AMR, and if I want a battery pack for the get on my day. Thank you for the answer, and 82 to you.
Okay,
very good. Yes, Paul.
I was carrying one of those booster batteries in the back of the car. You know, it's lead acid. But of course, you know, it's meant for that. You know, you leave it in the car if you have a problem. You plug it. You know, you charge your battery. You get your car going. But I had an alternative use for it. It's got USB on it. It's got a cigarette plug on there. So years ago, I didn't think nothing of plugging that into a 25-watt brick amplifier for the 2 meters. I used to run the HT like that. Instead of getting involved with taking the power from the car, I'd have the battery, you know, on the floor in the back of the car, just run the wire under the seat, plug it into the ham radio, and I was good to go. I used to do that quite a bit. No more, not in many years, but those batteries are meant for it. So, and of course, flashlights. I've never had a problem, of course, with alkaline batteries. The only problem you're going to have is, you know, put regular batteries in there, you know, from Harbor Freight or something, and maybe they're going to leak, but you won't need cold weather. You know, that happens on a regular basis, you know, for no reason. But back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I mean, again, batteries are basically just chemical reactions. And if you cool chemical reactions down, they still go on, but they go on at a slower rate, which would mean a lower current. So the amount of energy extraction deteriorates as the battery gets cooler and cooler, but usually there's nothing causing it to explode. If anything, it fizzles out at low temperatures. As far as alkaline batteries, I wish it was only cheap alkaline batteries that do that. I buy Duracell and Energizers, and on a regular basis, they kind of leak. Usually, and people tell everyone to not to leave batteries in a device that you're not going to use on a regular basis. And like most people, I keep forgetting to do that many times. But I've had one remote where it worked one day, and it didn't work the next day. And I popped it open, and sure enough, it had leaked, possibly over that short interval of time. So, you know, even if you buy good batteries and keep them at room temperature and use them regularly, there's no guarantee. Alkalines have a flaw, and they are capable of leaking. There's a one-way valve, pressure valve. So if the pressure builds up for whatever reason, the electrolyte will ooze out of it, and corrosive material will leave a mess inside your battery compartment, pretty much no matter what you do. Okay, let's move on to the next person tonight. Rich, W2BZ, what's your question for tonight, Rich?
Good evening, Paul. Good evening, everybody else. It's probably a very stupid question, even though no questions are stupid on the TechNet. But I've always wondered why different devices take different voltages. Like, I had two laptops, and one took a 12 volts, one took 19 volts. Then you have devices that take 9 volts and 24 volts. And I never knew why something would need 24 volts rather than 12 volts. I mean, a car takes 12 volts, so the starter in the car, I guess, is a device which takes 12 volts. But why would a laptop then take 19 volts? I know it's, you know, it's what the designers did, but I don't know how they make those decisions. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, it's an interesting question, and I'd love to hear some input from electrical engineers. Theoretically, you can practically spec any voltage that you want because you can always use converters, buck boosters, what have you. So you could have 9 volts, and you can electronically boost the voltage potential to any number that you want with the proper circuit in there. And you could drop it also. So why people decide on a particular voltage? Most likely because the component, there's at least one component that requires something close to that voltage potential to operate at its as optimum level, would be my guess. Or, you know, that they're just standardizing to a certain voltage. The reason why that we use what we call 12 volts, but it's probably more like 13.6 volts for a lot of our electronics, is that it was originally spec'd to operate with a car. And car batteries are about 13.6 when it's fully charged up and such. So sometimes it's just for uniformity, and other times it's specifically for some device in the circuit that works best at that given voltage, and the engineer didn't want to bother voltage conversion circuitry.
Well, why, for instance, would one computer take a big wall wart of 19 volts and my current one take a wall wart of 12 volts? What would be so different there?
Well, you know, all laptops are not created equal. There are, you know, in the good old days, there was cool fluorescent light as the display, which required a booster for the most part. I took one apart. It wouldn't operate at the usual voltage that laptops are used to, so that had a booster built onto the unit to get the voltage potential high enough to have the fluorescent light fire the way it was supposed to. But, you know, there's a lot of different components that are not, they might serve the same purpose, but they operate somewhat differently, LCDs versus LEDs. High-resolution screens sometimes require more voltage potential. There's a lot of different things. I think probably CPUs have a uniform voltage rails. That's why there's kind of standard power rails in personal computer power supplies. But when you go into things like laptops, they're all kind of unique engineering things. There's almost no such thing as a generic laptop. They're all built slightly differently, as opposed to PCs that have almost become generic commodities. You buy a motherboard, you buy memory chips, you buy solid state drives, and you're off, and a video board, and you're off to the races. And they're interchangeable, thankfully. That's not the case for laptops these days. Still, there's one company that lets you swap in and out and upgrade your laptop, theoretically. It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
I mean, motherboards, you got to feed them, I think it's either 5.5 volts or 3.3 volts. And you would think that a motherboard with a video card and maybe other cards in there, would run off of more than 5.5, maybe they do run off more than 5.5 volts, but all the peripherals are 5.5 volts. Am I correct in that, Roy?
Well, it depends on what you call peripherals. The video boards use high power rails. One of the big problems recently with the latest and greatest of NVIDIA RTX 4000 series is that you needed a real beefy power supply that was capable of different higher voltages, rails. So, generic 2010 computers possibly could get away with low power, but graphic boards these days are the massive power-hungry devices in the average computer. Solid-state drives, no. The motherboard, not really. The memory chips, not really. They could all sip. But things with large processing power, like a state-of-the-art graphics card, will draw hundreds of watts of power at higher voltage potentials than usual.
Intuition.
Yes, Wesley?
There's a question that you cannot find the answer on the internet. Nobody asked this question. And it's very interesting. Not a stupid question. It's a very interesting question. Most of electronic circuits or devices require DC power supply. And domestic DC installations usually have different type of sockets, connector switches, and fixtures. The thing is that standardization, if I use the proper word, standard, was not set for the different devices, and technology goes faster than standards. Like in electrical industry, we have standards, and they are set, and they are enforced by law. Let me jump. On the other hand, it is a lot of Chinese companies that use 36 volt for monitors, computer monitors. I had one that I damaged because I simply, it had a plug that feed into 12 volt another monitor, and I was just installing, and I put the bump power supply into it. So I blow one. But the thing is that the higher is the voltage, the lower is the current. So those who want to save on the size of power supplies and the size of wires delivered, use the higher voltage. Actually, on this PCB, you can adjust any value of voltage or the voltage potential that you are in need for. Easy to say is that you have 1 volt and you have 1 amp. Going through the device, and you have a 1 watt. But what's happening if it's 2 volts? Then the current is half of a watt. So if we have electrical light bulb that is 120 volts or 110 volts, and it's 100 watts, then the current is very small. But if you have, we want to have that 100 watts on 12 volts, then you have a very high power current. But if you want to have a light bulb that is on 100 watts and 1 volt, then you have to use what? H1 wire for it? I think that would be partial answer back to you.
Well, like in most cases, there's more than one reason why electrical engineers do the things that they do. All things being equal, if you have a device that's going to draw a lot of power, a lot of joules per second or watt, it's probably best to crank up the voltage potential and then decrease the amount of current, because, you know, unless you get to really wacky high voltage potentials, it's more of a pain in the backside to deal with the repercussions of a high current circuit. You have to get the wires have to be thicker, and they have to be able to dissipate more waste heat. So, I mean, among other things, I have a solid-state linear amplifier for my HF radio, and the LDMOS power modules are designed, I believe, for something like 58 volts, voltage differential, because they throw a lot of power, and so the engineers who designed them didn't want to have massive amounts of amps going through those wires. So that's one of the reasons. Again, it sort of depends upon different things. One of those is to limit the amount of current going through the cable systems and the generating the heat and other problems. But, you know, there are probably devices that require more voltage potential to operate at specs than others. Nowadays, so much is solid state that a lot of the electronics in a personal computer, you don't have to worry that much, except, again, when we go to things that are somewhat esoteric, like the ever-growing power of graphic processing boards, which consume vast quantities of power, and so need to have higher voltage rails in the power supply. And, you know, if you look at the specs, the voltage potential and the number of rails have increased over the years. And, you know, you mentioned, let me drop for a sec so I don't time out anything. Okay, you know, we talk about standards. And, you know, engineers are kind of aware of standards, and they sort of like to stick with standards. And so when USB became a thing, they designed the specification that a USB connector should be able to power 5-volt potential power. But unfortunately, technology moves on, and people wanted USB to charge up a laptop in a short amount of time. They're stuck with the 5 volts. You'd have to upgrade the current carrying capacity an enormous amount, and so they rejiggered the specifications, the standards, so that there are multiple voltage potentials within the USB / PD protocol. There's a little handshaking that takes place so that USB circuits don't get flooded by 12 volts of differential, voltage, unless they ask for it. But, you know, standards kind of last until they become counterproductive. And then engineers just change the standards.
I guess maybe, Roy, you know, what you said before made a lot of sense. Maybe they look at the component that has the highest need for voltage, and that's why they, at that voltage, and then they could, you know, down-volt it, down-power it, or underpower it to the other components.
EDH with a comment?
Yes, John.
One thing to keep in mind is that in the past, transistor logic, TTL logic, was pretty much runoff standard 5-volt power, Lately, in the last 4 or 5 years or so, they've come out with 3.3-volt TTL logic. Same logic functions, it's just that the running voltage, the power voltage is at 3.3 volts. This has been the trend in the last 5 years or so. So those two standards, 5 volts for power and 3.3 volts for power, could account for some of the difference in the operating voltage of some various computer boards. Okay?
Yeah, I think part of it has to do with the design of integrated circuits, whether they're using TL type of devices or they're using CMOS type of devices. But yeah, different integrated circuits are designed for different voltages. But again, it's not that difficult to put a voltage regulator and either kick it up or drop it down. People do it all the time on a lot of components. But ultimately, hopefully, they come to some conclusion that the most efficient way of dealing with it is setting the input power voltage to a particular voltage and dealing with the variations down the line.
Yeah, Roy, that's probably the answer, that they go with a component that needs the most voltage and deal with the rest of the components down the line through transformers, rectifiers, and whatever.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's almost impossible to find a complicated circuit that doesn't have some voltage regulation, sub-circuits in the logic, just to accomplish the same exact thing. But, it's probably a little bit better.
We may ask also the same question, why we have a 110 volts and 220 in Europe. If we're talking about the voltages, of course there's historical issue of the way that electricity was developed in different areas of parts of the world. But it's exactly the same question. Thank you.
Well, I would tend to differ. I don't think there is a reason in Europe for it to be 220 and a reason in the United States to be 120. In point of fact, the United States gives you the option. You can get a 220 line. You can get a 120 line. Equally, people had to decide what the frequency of the alternating current was going to be. 60 cycles per second versus 50 cycles per second. I assume in the United States they chose 60 cycles because they thought it would be kind of nifty to synchronize it to clock movements and such, because, 60 is how many intervals we use for a lot of time measurements and such, whereas in Europe they kind of like the number 5 better than the number 6, so they have 50 hertz signals. So, I think sometimes it's a little bit arbitrary. Either voltage potential would suffice, either frequency would suffice, but someone had to decide on one, and Europe always kind of doesn't want to do what the United States does, and the United States doesn't want to necessarily do what Europe does, which is why we still have inches and feet and such. But I don't think, I think it's probably a more intellectual exercise for the designers of electronic devices as opposed to when they had to standardize the utility power specifications.
It's a very broad answer that you gave. You have 110 volts, one phase, but you have a 220 between the phases. In Europe, you have 360. So it's not necessary that if you want, you have it. You don't. And military devices used in the United States score 60.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are some cases where, you need a lot of power, so you're better off with a high voltage differential. In residential areas, usually 120 suffices, and if you need a little bit more, you use both of your two-phase wiring, and you got yourself 230 volts. So, for the most part, I can't perceive of something going on in the person's house that would necessitate having a 400-volt power supply. Industry, yeah, but, you know, you could do all kinds of interesting things in industry to boost voltage if you need to. But, you know, they had to decide on a consumer utility electronic specification. There's some people in the UK who love theirs, and some people in the United States that love ours. So,
UKW.
Yes, Alan.
I can think of an instance where you would require 480 volts.
Okay.
If you bought an accessory that ran on 480 volts.
Okay, that's sort of chicken and the egg logic. I mean, you could use the same excuse for why you would need a 960 volt power supply.
Yeah, but I don't know anything that runs at 960 volts. I know that, you know, there's three-phase devices that run on 480. If that's what you got to get, then that's the power that you need that's available. You know, it's that difficult to get. That's that, you know, that's why you might need it. I got an SP220 that'll run on 110 or 220, and I got it wired to 220 for a slightly lower voltage drop. If it could run on 480, and if 480 was available, I would do that.
That's to exchange.
Wesley recognized? Yeah, Howard, I understand, but again, it's chicken and the egg. I don't know of any consumer product that requires 480 volts. Maybe a factory device, but I'm unaware of anything that I could buy for a reasonable amount of money and plant in my living room and turn it on and such. So, you know, I mean, you can make a case for any voltage potential, but you have to decide on one or the other at some point in the development of the specifications, and then you're kind of locked in for the next few hundred years.
You might not find anything that runs on 480 in your living room, but you might find something that runs on 480 in your shack. Ask your friend Bill. Whoops, she's a sound kid.
Yeah, unless you have better communication equipment than I have, I can't communicate with the dead.
I'm talking about high power amplifiers.
Okay, but then wouldn't that end up being a FCC violation? Or isn't that too powerful for FCC rules?
Absolutely. Yeah, W2ONV is a silent key. He blew out 7/8
inch. Okay, well, you know, there are some guys out there that need to climb the tallest mountain. You know, why? Because it's there. But there are guys who are into CB who probably are using ridiculous amounts of power incredibly illegally. There are guys that put row upon row of automotive batteries into the rear of their car and have a subwoofer that will probably burst their eardrums very soon. So, you know, there's always guys out there looking for something a little bit more. Yeah, most of us, you know, settle for what's legal.
Well, I visited Bill when he was alive. I bought an amplifier chassis from a Canadian amplifier company that could hold two tubes. No power supply, just RF jack. But this was a driver. God knows what they were driving, but it was the X1500. I never built the amplifier. He said, would you like to see the station? I said, sure. And he brings me up to a little room that could have been a nursery in a house. Got a very simple heat kit station on the desk. An SB200, a small heat kit amplifier. And I look at it, and I look at him, and I squint. He says, okay. He opens up the closet door. The whole closet was lined with insulation. The top of it had an exhaust fan. There was a big rack panel in it, which held, I think, a 4CX25,000. And the power supply was much too heavy. to bring upstairs to the nursery. So the power supply was in the garage, and he used the coaxial cable for plus and minus. Over.
Okay, so he had his own personal broadcast station.
Yeah, more or less. But, you know, he sold high power tubes for a living. Yeah, that's what he did. He had it available to him. Your friend Bill in Saddlebrook, may you rest in peace. He was a wonderful man.
Well, I guess if he supplied commercial interest with these things, he wanted to get high on his own supply. So, you know, what can I tell you? The wild, wild west. But in general, I don't know. I'm kind of happy with 220. I never particularly felt as though I'm that envious of the United Kingdom. I wish them well with their slightly higher voltage. And I do not like their plugs much. If people are familiar with the standard UK power plug, it is a very large. It's probably safer than ours, maybe, but it is incredibly large. So I don't find it aesthetically pleasing, personally.
I've got the European plug for the power supply from my computer, but I don't know if that's the UK standard. I think it's only got two wires. Hey, what night is the swapping shop? Is that tomorrow night?
Yes, indeed. It is tomorrow night after the InfoNet.
Okay. I'll give you a preview. I was out at the flea market. Wanted to see some friends. But while I was out there, I bought a paddle that I liked very much from an estate. The guy who sold it said, you're going to be the net. You know, selling it. No way it's going to be part of my collection. I love it. But I did win a door prize. I won Ham Radio Deluxe Software valued at $99.95. It expires in 30 days that I have absolutely no use for. So I'll be offering that on the swapper shop net.
Yeah, I used to own that. It's a subscription software. The original software designer got bored with it and sold it off to a couple of guys who kind of screwed around with it for the first year or two, and hopefully they figured out how to make it useful. I let my subscription lapse. It's an overly complicated piece of software. You know, if you like Swiss Army, with 582 blades on it, that might be the software for you people out there. I found it much too complicated to be useful for my purposes. But I'm sure there'll be someone who'll take it for free. That's a good price for a ham.
Well, every ham but this one. This is good for a copy of HRD or just a software maintenance. It's valued at $100. You know, I gotta get something for it. I can't get, you know, I don't want $100 for it, but I gotta get something for it. Very, to that one self be true, over.
Okay, I understand. It'll be interesting to see if you have any buyers for, I assume you haven't really decided on the price yet. Or are you leaving it up to haggling?
Yeah, I was thinking a half price, but somebody wants to make a lower offer, I listen.
Okay, well, I wish you luck. Like I said, I have used HRU, what's it called again? Ham Radio Deluxe. I've used it. It has a lot of options. It has a lot of busy windows. You know, sometimes keep it simple is a good philosophy.
Ain't that the truth? See you tomorrow night. M2KW out.
Okay, very good, Alan. Wes, you wanted to say something.
Sure. So, 512 volts, white 24 volts, white 480 volts AC, white 220, white 110. If we start from 480 volts in high voltage, it's a high voltage commonly used in U.S. for commercial and industrial application. That would be what? Lighting, electrical system, pumps, motors, compressors, heavy lighting. Well, right now everything switches to LED. So